are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. Welcome to the weekend. Happy weekend, everybody. Happy end to the 11-game losing streak. The Timberwolves, of course, beat the Kings on Thursday evening to snap the longest losing streak of the season by far. And thank goodness for the Sacramento Kings, am I right? Today, we're going to extol the greatness of the Timberwolves after their first win in nearly a month, as well as looking ahead to Saturday night's tilt against the Cleveland Cavaliers back at Target Center. The Wolves are back from their four-game road trip. Of course, have not been any better at home than they have been on the road, actually. They've been worse at Target Center so far this year, but they will be facing a Cavaliers team that recently traded one of their best two players and has struggled mightily on the road this season. So we're going to get into that here in just a little bit as we preview the Saturday night game. First of all, did want to talk about the end to the long, dark losing streak that spanned basically what it was like the Wednesday before Thanksgiving was the last time the Wolves won. So really, yeah, a month, almost exactly. A shorthanded Kings team that lost both De'Aaron Fox and Marvin Bagley during the game due to injury still put up a fight and needed double overtime to manage to lose to the Wolves, who were led by Andrew Wiggins, 4 of 19 shooting performance in the game. Truth be told, though, the 4 of 19 for Wiggins is a little bit misleading. He was 8 of 10 from the free throw line and should have had plenty more opportunities from the charity stripe. Poor officiating is at least partly to blame for Wiggins' night. He was, I would say, hacked several times on the way to the rim with no call, finished through contact or attempted to finish through contact that wasn't called several times. And 8 of 10 from the free throw line for a guy that struggled to shoot above 70% the last few years, you know, the Wolves will take that too. He probably should have had another 6 to 8 free throws on top of those 10 attempts. And perhaps if he had gotten the benefit of some of those whistles, the game would not have gone to double overtime. Wiggins also did have 7 assists to just 3 turnovers. He had 10 rebounds in the game. Was overall, the Kings broadcast, there was a couple of clips of the Kings broadcast. I think it was near the end of regulation, or maybe it was the first overtime, when Wiggins missed a shot. Would have won the game. And the Kings broadcast was said that Wiggins had been awful in the game. And if you just look at the box score, you could believe that. And 4 of 19 isn't really, it's hard to spin that positively, but as I just did a moment ago in trying to spin it positively, he overall played well, and the Wolves, you know, needed him to have one of those high volume but still effective performances. And the 7 assists and 10 rebounds with only 3 turnovers shows you that he did more than just jack up, you know, contested shots throughout the game. Some of the same issues that Wiggins has had of late and for most of his career were still there. I actually wrote about this at Dunkin' with Wolves on Friday after the game on Thursday, related to Wiggins' style of play and some of the issues that are rearing their ugly head again. But just because he shouldn't be the number one scoring option on a playoff team doesn't mean that he can't have some of these games where he does contribute in multiple areas and manages to fight through some of his more inefficient shot selection and all that to contribute in other areas like assists and rebounds, making the right pass even if his teammates aren't knocking down shots, and doing a better job of finishing through contact, getting to the free throw line, shooting at the rim instead of settling for, you know, 10-foot floaters, which for whatever reason for Wiggins seemed to rim out more often than not. Diving deeper, this is going a little bit on a tangent, but diving deeper at some of Wiggins' shooting percentages from in the paint, they're not far off the league's best wing players, the league's best finishers, but they are a little bit lower than where they should be. And Wiggins has certainly sacrificed some of those at the rim attempts that he was attempting earlier in his career for some of those 3 to 10 foot attempts, and those aren't quite as efficient for a few reasons, and he's also drawing less fouls if he's shooting from, you know, 10 feet instead of from 2 feet. So all that to say, despite some of those issues in this game, Wiggins overall had a solid game considering how bad the Wolves had been lately overall. Their struggles from beyond the arc in this game we'll get into in a second. He kind of battled through all that adversity and still had a strong performance and really did lead the Wolves to the win in this one when they didn't have anyone else that was going to consistently create offense. That said, we do need to give shout outs to a few other players who had good games. Gorgui Dieng had 21 and 15 in this game. He was 7 of 13 from the field, 3 of 7 from beyond the arc. And I think it's safe to say that Gorgui is now officially a decent 3-point shooter. He's shooting on the season, he's shooting 37.5% from beyond the arc. He's over 40% over his last 10 games. And now, you know, with no Towns, clearly there's, you know, Gorgui is no Karl-Anthony Towns, but he's held his own. 21 and 15, 3 of 7 beyond the arc, 4 of 4 from the free throw line, couple of steals, only one turnover in 41 minutes. You know, he knows his role, and now that he's been able to expand his range to the 3-point arc, he's a valuable player, and I would be shocked if he wasn't a part of the rotation. You know, I guess he was before Towns was hurt, but I wonder if the Wolves would even consider in some instances playing big with Gorgui and Towns or Vonleh and Towns or Gorgui and Vonleh, some mix of those players on the court depending on the opponent. Robert Covington did come to play. He had exited the game against Golden State early. I think it was ahead. He was never diagnosed with a concussion or anything, and of course turned around and played. That was on Monday. Turned around and played on Thursday. He played 40 minutes in this game, so clearly was no worse for the wear after the game on Monday. And he's been one of the primary culprits of guys who are playing beneath their ability lately with Towns off, not available. Covington had 19 points, 8 rebounds in this game, was 8 of 19 from the field, only 2 of 8 from beyond the arc, but was a team best plus 12 and clearly contributed. He had a couple of blocks, you know, was solid on defense and didn't, you know, he made a couple of threes, but, you know, in shooting only 25% from beyond the arc, was able to contribute in other areas, shooting 6 of 11 from inside the arc. So good game from Covington. It's what they needed. If they can get 20, you know, 20-ish from Wiggins, Covington, and Gorgui, all three of them, they're going to have a shot in these games without Towns available. And that includes the game against Cleveland on Saturday night. The Wolves didn't get a lot else from really anyone else. Jeff Teague came off the bench, had 15 points in 37 minutes, but it took him 17 shots to get there. Was 1 of 6 from downtown, 6 rebounds, 3 assists. Shabazz Napier started and was 0 of 6 from beyond the arc. So Teague and Napier combined to shoot 1 of 12 on 3-point attempts. Josh Cookie and Jarrett Culver both came off the bench. Trevion Graham started and played 40 minutes after getting a couple of games where he only played a few minutes. I think he even had one or two DNP CDs mixed in recently. But in this game, he played solid enough defense to keep himself on the court, only attempted 6 shots in 40 minutes, had 9 points, 5 rebounds, and was the primary wing defender for the Wolves. Okogie was fine when he was in the game. He only played 18 minutes. So we'll see if this is a strategy by Ryan Saunders, depending on matchups, if he's just kind of going to try and go with the quote-unquote hot hand defensively between the trio of Graham, Culver, Jarrett Culver, and Okogie. Jarrett Culver only played 14 minutes. Keelan Martin only played 5 minutes after having a strong game in Golden State on Monday. So the wing rotation was really skewed heavily towards Trevion Graham in this game, which is very opposite of what had been happening recently. So good on Saunders to, I guess, make another change, tweak the lineup, try and make things work. I'm guessing that with this team not currently, you know, in realistic playoff striking distance, mixing up this rotation and just kind of seeing what sticks makes some sense for Ryan Saunders. I know he's been taking some flack for doing that recently because the rotations have been all over the place, but it's hard to blame the guy when the team's losing that many games in a row. You have to try some different things. So good on Ryan Saunders for, you know, being willing to try some of those different things. All right, we're going to talk more globally about the Wolves in this game as a team and what they did, and then peek ahead to the game against Cleveland on Saturday. First, wanted to mention Casper. The original Casper mattress combines multiple supportive memory foams for a quality sleep surface with the right amounts of both sink and bounce. Get $100 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/lockednba and using promo code LOCKEDNBA at checkout. That's casper.com/lockednba and use promo code LOCKEDNBA, LOCKEDNBA at checkout. Terms and conditions apply. If you can't visit Casper right now, you can find this and all other offers from Lockdown sponsors, and there are a lot of them, at lockedonpodcast.com/offers. That's lockedonpodcast.com/offers. Reviewing Thursday's win over the Kings as a whole, the Timberwolves really struggled shooting the ball, as I'm sure that if you hadn't watched this game, you could have guessed at a 105-104 final score in two overtimes that neither team shot the ball very well. And given that these are both their 11 and 12 win teams now, respectively, the Wolves and the Kings, it wasn't exactly a defensive, a staunch defensive battle either. It was more an issue of just shot making, and poor officiating was part of it too. The Timberwolves shot 34.6% from the field in this game. The Kings were 34.6%. The Kings attempted three more shots and made one more shot. So the same percentage from the field. Timberwolves were 10 of 46 for me on the arc. That's 21.7%. Already called out Teague going 1 for 6 and Napier going 0 for 6. Bates Diop was 0 for 3. Culver was 0 for 2. Everybody else, at least that attempted a three, made one. But there, it just was not, Wiggins was 2 of 9 for me on the arc. Covington 2 of 8. There just wasn't high quality shot making in this game. Both teams were okay from the free throw line. The Wolves were 79%. Kings were 84%. But 3-point shooting, 3-point shooting, 3-point shooting. We could say this all day long about the Timberwolves, and this is going to be, even if Towns comes back and this team stabilizes, and I think they will. I think they'll end up, right now they're on pace for roughly, maybe even a little bit below their Vegas over under 35.5 wins. I think they're going to still end up in that neighborhood. They've still got some decently easy games. They're going to play better at home eventually. It doesn't make any sense that they've been that bad at Target Center. And Towns will come back. This team's ultimate downfall and the difference between maybe 35, 36 wins and missing a playoff spot and 42 wins and making a playoff spot is going to be 3-point shooting. And we've said this plenty of times on this podcast, but the Wolves need to find a way to have a pass first point guard initiate this offense, which is not, certainly not Jeff Teague, with his style of play. And Shabazz Napier is fine as a backup, but especially with his shooting issues that he's had so far this year, he's, he's okay, but he's not a starter, on a playoff team. The Wolves need to address the point guard situation. They need to find some shooting. Javon Graham is fine as a perimeter defender. He's a good, ideally he's a 10 to 12 minute a game guy as your ninth or 10th guy on a playoff team. But unfortunately at this point, that's basically what Jarrett Culver is. And Josh Okogie might be, a six man type, but they don't have starting caliber wings this side of Robert Covington on this team. Okogie could still grow into that. And he's, you could do worse than him if he's in the starting lineup, but, the Wolves need to find another guy who can knock down threes at a high clip. Wiggins is fine as a catch and shoot guy. He can shoot league average from three. He can cut to the rim. He can create offense. He's fine as an overall second option. And Covington's great as a third option, as a spot up 3-point shooter and defender. But they're one guy short in the starting lineup. That other wing spot, whether it's Graham, whether it's Culver, whether it's Okogie, and then also finding a point guard that fits the system, that's going to be the difference. And those are relatively easy fixes. It's hard to do on the fly in season, but those are fixes that the Wolves could make for 2020 to 21 for the following season. And this team could jump from however many wins they get in the 30s this year, mid to upper 30s. That could jump this team 5 to 10 wins next year with natural progression from Okogie and Karl Anthony Towns and all that, and a healthy Towns next year. What this team then would need is a guy who can start, be a pass first point guard, play solid defense, and another shooter. Of course, to acquire those players, unless it's all done via free agency, which is obviously very difficult to do, the Wolves may have to give up a guy like a Covington, certainly give up a guy like Teague. So, it's not necessarily a super easy fix, but it's also not, the Wolves have the number one guy in Towns. They have a passable number two guy in Wiggins, and you can make the playoffs with those two guys as your one and two, as long as the fringe players, the fringe rotation players all make sense. So all that to say, this game the Wolves managed to win in just kind of a high-volume chuck fest that was ugly from a physical but not exactly strong defensive perspective, not enough fouls called, but yet given the length of the game, there were still, 54 free throws shot in the game between the two teams. But the Wolves persevered, and you got to give them credit for finally winning. It would have been easy to pack this one in and say, let's just wait until we get home on Saturday night against a beatable Cleveland team. But Wiggins, and Gorgui Dieng and Robert Covington really willed this team to victory in this game. And kudos to Ryan Saunders and the team for finally getting another win. I guess improving the record to 11-19. Quick look at the standings says that the Wolves are, they're still somehow only two games out of the playoffs. Of course, there's like four teams between them in the eighth spot. Portland's 14-18 and is in the eighth spot currently. And then the Spurs are a game back. The Kings are 1.5 back. And the Memphis Grizzlies and the Timberwolves are tied at two games back of Portland for the eight spot. So remarkably, after losing 11 in a row and not having Towns available for the last five games, and unlikely that he's available on Saturday night against Cleveland, the Wolves somehow are still in striking distance of the playoffs. I don't think they feel, they certainly shouldn't feel good about themselves. And given their current standing, it's hard to say the Wolves should be buyers or anything like that and trade assets to improve the team at, you know, for this season. But there's something to be said for only being two games out in the West. And, you know, I think trying to making the playoffs as a 40 win team or something is still a semi-realistic goal. Despite all the teams they're going to have to fight through to get there. But I mean, hey, they're only half game behind the Kings now, and they have the 1-0 tiebreaker lead against Sacramento. All right, next up, we're going to talk about Cleveland on Saturday night, what the Wolves will need to do to beat the Cavaliers. The Cleveland Cavaliers remain one of the league's worst teams. They're 9-22 in the season. They're essentially the tied for the third worst team in the league with the other 9-win teams, New Orleans and Golden State, ahead of only the Knicks and Hawks, who have 8 and 6 wins respectively. The Cavs, of course, still have Kevin Love, and then Jordan Clarkson was their other best player until he was just traded this week. They're coached by John Beilein, the longtime University of Michigan coach. This is his first year coaching in the NBA. There's been plenty of stories written about players tuning him out, you know, guys just like not getting along with his coaching style, going to, you know, former Timberwolves assistant and former Golden Gopher JB Bickerstaff, who's the associate head coach, to try and communicate what the players want to communicate to the coaching staff. Who knows? You know, obviously those are relatively damning stories. The Cavs have apparently already started their sell-off by moving Jordan Clarkson to Utah, getting Dante Exum and a couple of picks back, second rounders. Clarkson, of course, didn't play in the last two games now for the Cavs. Exum played in the Cavs loss on Friday night at Boston in his first game in a Cavaliers uniform. And really, Jordan Clarkson has been the Cavs' best player this year. He's been the most consistent player, a good shooter, a high-volume scorer, but relatively efficient for what he does. And the way that the Cavs operate their offense is to rely on those high-volume scorers in the backcourt. Even though Clarkson was coming off the bench for this team and, you know, giving way in terms of minutes to rookie Darius Garland, who the Wolves allegedly had wanted to trade up for, but the Cavs took him before the Wolves, and the Wolves ended up with Jarrett Culver. And then Colin Sexton, who's the team's leading scorer, 17.9 points per game, was a rookie last year, has started all 31 games for the Cavs, but remains inefficient, 27% from beyond the arc, 45% from the field, not terrible. But, you know, overall, Sexton is not a starting caliber NBA player yet, but he's being forced into that high volume, high usage role simply because the Cavs need to get their offense from somewhere, and they're struggling to operate through Kevin Love. Part of that, again, is by choice because of wanting to develop these high volume, these shooters, these scorers in the backcourt. And then also their inability to get Kevin Love the ball in good spots on the floor. There's been some much publicized frustration from Love. There was Zach Lowe from ESPN talked about this on, I think it was the Low Post podcast, a clip where Love is demanding the ball in the post and intentionally took a 3-second call, was actually there for 6 or 7 seconds in the paint to prove a point that he was open had good post position, basically right underneath the rim, and he could have easily accepted a post entry pass, but the Cavs guards weren't getting him the ball. Love's still been good this year. He's averaging 16.7 points, 10.6 rebounds, still shooting 38.5% from beyond the arc, attempting a little more than 6 threes a game. In the loss to Boston on Friday night, Love was 6 of 11 from beyond the arc, scored 30 points. I think he had 7 rebounds in the game. He had 30 and 7, 6 of 11 from beyond the arc, 4 assists, no turnovers. We'll see. There's only a 1-game sample size, but without Clarkson in the fold, we'll see how much more the Cavs might concentrate on getting Love the ball. Colin Sexton still shot the ball 20 times against the Celtics, but Garland only had 7 shot attempts, did turn the ball over 4 times and had 0 assists. So the Cavs problems are going to continue to rear their ugly head. They aren't a good defensive team. They're a bottom, I think they're 29th in defensive rating in the league. And they have these high volume guys who are not consistent. Jetty Osman is another one. Sexton, Garland, they're going to try and get Kevin Porter Jr. some more run. And then they've got this weird grouping of veteran point guards in the backcourt, Matthew Dellavedova, Dante Exum off the bench. So just kind of an odd team, odd mix of veterans that are going to be sold off at any moment, including Tristan Thompson, Love. And then also these young guys that they're trying to get experience, but they're bad defensively and inefficient on offense. There's nothing to write home about offensively for Cleveland. They have enough talent that they can be dangerous, but they're so bad on defense that no matter what they do in offense, it really hasn't mattered. In terms of pace, the Cavs don't play very fast. Who knows if that changes moving forward, as say if Kevin Love is traded. But they're just, again, there just isn't much potency to the Cavs offense. There's just some athletic ability in the backcourt. There's Love's efficiency from beyond the arc, but he's only shooting six threes a game. So as long as, you know, if Towns doesn't play, the Wolves should be able to do okay in this game with Gorgui Dieng taking, you know, checking Kevin Love as best as he can. And the Wolves just staying home on defense, playing good, solid perimeter defense. And really, well, as much, as many issues as the Wolves have had with their wing defenders, were wing players from Trevion Graham to Jarrett Culver to Josh Okogie, that trio is at this moment a better trio than the, you know, the Osman, Sexton, Garland trio for the Cavs, and should be able to hold them down and do some damage offensively themselves against a bad defensive team in the Cavs. So this is a game, regardless of whether or not Towns plays, the Wolves should win. And if Towns does play, they should win this one going away. It wouldn't surprise me if the Wolves just decided to give Towns another couple of days. The report earlier this week was that he was getting closer to returning. But don't be shocked if the Wolves choose to wait until Monday night's game to allow Towns to play instead of trying to force him, you know, into the lineup in a game that they probably should win anyways, or they really definitely should win anyways against a bad Cleveland Cavs team. Officially, Towns is listed as questionable for the game on Saturday, and Jake Lehman is listed as out, according to Timberwolves PR. Late on Friday was the official word, but we'll see what happens. All right, we'll be back on Monday morning, bright and early, with a quick recap of Saturday's game, studs and duds from the game against the Cavs, as well as a look ahead to Monday night's game. And then we'll take a peek ahead at the week for the Wolves and what they and what's on the docket here upcoming for the Timberwolves as they try and, you know, they play a few more games at home upcoming, and then the schedule gets tough as we get into January. So we'll take a peek ahead at what they might need to do to stabilize and get themselves back into the conversation for the 8 seed in the Western Conference now that that ugly losing streak is gone and done with. All right, that's all we have for you today. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.